Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. In the studio today on This Medical Monday is Dr. Daniel Cameron of First Medical Associates in Mount Kisco, New York, home of the Lyme Project for Research and Treatment of Lyme Disease. He's the guy, in other words. With the addition of Lyme disease, that's L-Y-M-E, to his primary care practice in 1988, today Dr. Cameron and the Lyme Project staff evaluate more than 1,000 new and recurrent patients with Lyme disease annually. The Lyme Project also coordinates a surveillance database and clinical trials to develop the highest level of care to Lyme disease patients. Dr. Cameron received his Doctor of Medicine degree from the University of Minnesota Medical School and holds a Master's of Public Health degree in Epidemiology from the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. Dr. Cameron, it is such a pleasure and such an honor to have a man of your achievements here with us today. We really appreciate it.
I'm happy to be back.
To be part of today's conversation, 1-800-348-2551. Ladies and gentlemen, there are now one person on the phone. There are four free phones. Every one of them is going to be filled up within seconds because Lyme disease is so prevalent. And I have to tell you, if you want to get on, don't yell at me later. This is the time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. It's a growth in the disease, is there not, Doc?
The disease keeps growing, and to more counties are affected. It keeps moving upstate all the way to Canada, and there's a study where millions of ticks are crossing into Canada via birds.
Wow. The birds are carrying the ticks, and then they drop them off, or what happens?
Well, I think the birds flick them off, and then the tick starts a new life in a new neighborhood, new yard, and then the mice in that yard keep the ticks going.
Okay, so very quickly, let's go over some of the ground rules of Lyme disease. How do you know when you got it?
Most of the time, you're sick. Now, once in a while, you're lucky enough to get a nice rash. It might not even be a simple bullseye rash. It might be something else. But what's really a problem is if you don't see a nice rash that's 2 inches in size, if you don't have a paralysis of the side of your face called Bell's palsy, it's when you get sick and you're sick day after day with all types of chronic severe symptoms.
What are some of the symptoms? Fatigue?
Yeah, fatigue is one, but you get so used to the fatigue, you kind of adapt and you can get more tired, more headaches, dizziness, pains that keep moving around, pains that seem like fibromyalgia, fatigue that seems as bad as chronic fatigue. You might even be very irritable, very anxious, very wired.
So are we suitably equipped to find the ticks on our body? What I mean by that is, you know, I'm in the garden all the time. I take a shower. I try to leave long clothes on, not always, but then get in the shower and look for ticks, and I can't find them.
Well, first of all, you have to have good eyesight.
Yeah, I don't.
And
I take my glasses off to shower.
Oh, then that's even worse. Yeah. So the ticks, the nymph ticks are so small,
right?
They're hard to see. But a nymph turns into an adult, which is pretty good size of a sesame seed. And even then, you can flick them off in the shower, flick them off in the car without thinking about it. And you miss that opportunity to have a heads up, know your bit.
I'm sorry, I don't get that heads up, know your bit.
Well, you'd like to always have a warning that if you get a bite,
oh, I see.
Then at least you can sort of know to look out for the symptoms, know to look out for a rash. And but some people just never see that tick.
1-800-348-2551. Enough of me. Let's go to Nancy in Saugerties. Nancy, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I'm enjoying your program, Alan. I love this Medical Monday, as many of your programs we love. My question is, I understand that the ELISA test is a test that insurance will cover for Lyme disease, but it's not reliable. However, the Western blot test, you have to pay for that out of pocket, and it's much more expensive, but that's a valid test. I want the doctor to, what his take is on that.
Okay, Nancy, here he goes. Go.
And ELISA looks for antibodies to certain proteins that are in the infection. A Western blot looks for even more antibodies, more types of proteins that are in a tick. So it's it often is better. It starts picking up cases you might miss with an ELISA. It's just still imperfect. There are people who don't have enough proteins, so they get four proteins, maybe not five. It's often covered, though. If an ELISA is covered, so is a Western blot, typically.
Oh, I see. Well, that's
Nancy, thank you very much. As you might imagine, there's one. No, they're all blinking off the hook. Thank you very much, Nancy. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Bye. Let's go to Kate in Medusa, where everybody's thinking. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi. My question is that a couple of years ago, they suspected I had Lyme disease. I was tested for it. The test results didn't come back for 3 days. I was put on an antibiotic initially. The results were negative. This year, I took my dog because she was very sick. She was tested. They knew the results in less than an hour. She did have Lyme, and she was started on antibiotics. Why was it so much longer for them to find for me and that I was on antibiotics unnecessarily for 3 days?
That's a great question, and I got to tell you, Kate, we just waited because Roselle thought she had it, and it took 6 days to get the results.
Okay.
Well, often animals get more respect than people, and so there isn't a great test for people that you can count on and predict. There's a kit that the lab has that is just an ELISA. It's not a Western blot. So all we know is that the doctor still has to decide how you're feeling, how long you've been sick, and make a judgment even without a test. So they may have to act like they did with you, is that they might have to just treat anyway if it looks too much like you're like Lyme disease.
But aren't we being told again and again now, NPR has been covering it, that we're giving out too many antibiotics, and every time you take one, it may in fact dilute your defense mechanism to other antibiotics.
There's plenty of side effects that come with antibiotic treatment, but there's also people who are getting so sick with Lyme sometimes.
Sure.
So that the doctors has to weigh the fear we have of using antibiotics against what happens if somebody's devastated, they find themselves years later quite sick. And so this one disease is quite different than a typical virus, a cold.
Yeah.
And so it calls for tougher decision making in the for the doctor.
Hey, thank you very much, Kate. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Right, let's go to Jennifer in Pittsfield, 1-800-348-2551. Jennifer, you're on.
Hello, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. My granddaughter had been bitten by a tick when she was about 11 or 12 years old. They did a test on her, and she ended up having 5 of the 4 bands. So, you know, they determined that she had Lyme disease. You know, this young kid has gone through numerous, numerous types of treatments and still has difficulties from this. I'm just wondering if the doctor could share on some, you know, chronic support, you know, treatment, support, whatever that could possibly be helpful. I mean, we're willing to try anything.
Well, those bands that you're talking about is the Western blot bands. So
right.
That's it's nice because even having a positive test with a lot of bands, you describe well the challenges of chronic Lyme, why people are willing to give antibiotics to try, and why they're willing to treat a second time, why I feel comfortable treating. It's just that when this kid's trying to go to school, trying to get an education, and it affects them emotionally, affects them physically, they're fatigued, it's hard to get up, is that it becomes a much more complicated illness in more and more children. In your case, a grandchild.
Right.
So Jennifer, because there's so many people on, why don't you give a little bit more of a focused question? I mean, what is it that you really want the doctor to answer rather than a general idea about what should we be doing? Is there a specific that you'd like to ask him?
What types of treatments that a young child can use or a young person can use to help with the muscle aches and pains, the headaches, the fatigue. I mean, what can a young person do to manage this?
Well, the,
other than antibiotics.
Well, once with the antibiotics, it sounds like they've tried more than one antibiotic, because doxycycline, amoxicillin, Zithromax are common. But
right.
It's difficult, because to control fatigue or control irritability involves all kinds of symptomatic treatment, like sleeping pills are tough to give a teenager. Anti-anxiety pills are tough to give a teenager. And also that some of the pain medicines aren't working very well. So it's going to, it often requires a lot of time with a doctor who's comfortable with chronic illnesses to try to come up with the best way to manage a kid. Also, the emotional issues of being a teenager is bad enough as it is without a chronic illness affecting their care. So they have to work with you, with the parents to get some way to manage those symptoms.
Hey, Jennifer, we've got to take a break.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate that.
Bye-bye. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Here we go.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting. 845-336-6310. NBT Bank, offering personal banking, financial planning, commercial, and business banking. NBTBank.com, member FDIC. Bard Summerscape, presenting the 23rd Annual Bard Music Festival, Sassans and His World, 2 weeks of concerts, panels, and more, now through August 19th, 845-758-7900. And Shedman Custom Woodworks, building sheds, gazebos, animal shelters, and outdoor furniture for over 25 years, New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York. Shedman.com for inventory.
And we are back with Dr. Cameron, who is considered to be the brightest light in the Lyme field. And we are delighted that you're all with us today, because it's a very important program. Right now, all five phones are ringing, but as soon as somebody hangs up, dial it. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to John. All right, John in Glenmont, you're on.
Hello. Yes, doctors. How are you today?
Good.
I have a question about... something I hear often from people that have never had Lyme disease. I had it last year and was treated. And I always hear people tell me that once you have it, you never get rid of it. It's always in your body. Is that true?
Well, I think there's always a risk that even if you get better, it could come back. But I never like to say stop, give up, stop all treatment, stop the presses, because... it's worth a second chance. It's worth a third chance to treat. Other doctors say, hey, just treat the symptoms and just live with it. But these symptoms are too hard to live with.
Yeah, I had symptoms for about, it started last summer, and then I went for a course of antibiotics, and I still had symptoms, and I was off the antibiotics. I called the doctor right away, and I said, I need to get back on them. I still have symptoms, and I was treated for maybe altogether a couple of months or so. And then my symptoms went away, and I haven't had any since. So I'm just wondering, could it still be in a dormant state?
Well, you're a good example that the doctor was listening, treated the second time. It was successful. They treated longer the second time around, which is a great move on their part. As long as you know Lyme fairly well, I think you just have to make sure if something comes back for a week or more, get back to that doctor and say, hey, this is my circumstances. The doctor will look you over.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
bye. Bye-bye.
You know, one of the questions, and we have a lot of people on the phones, is one free phone open. But, we have five gardens at our place, and I love to garden. I mean, I really love it. But is it stupid?
Yes. It's so much, there's so much love to being in a garden or having a pet, is that there's risks of antibiotics, but there's also risk of just living. And so I think probably going on to live a life knowing the risk is probably the way to go.
Long sleeves, shoes, socks over your pants?
No? I'm not convinced that tucking pants into socks works, even though it's been talked about, because the tick just kind of runs up the outside of the sock anyway and finds some other way to get you.
Wonderful. Just wonderful.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go to Richard in, I don't know, but it's probably Doonesbury. I'm just joking about that. Richard, you're on.
Queensbury, New York.
Oh, Queensbury. Okay, gotcha.
There used to be a Lyme vaccine in the 90s, and the manufacturer stopped it because it was giving people arthritis due to the same protein in the bacteria in human joints. Is there any new vaccine being developed these days?
We certainly need a vaccine for a disease that has so many people that are acutely sick, and such a high number end up chronically sick. We need one, but there's nothing in the pipeline, and once it gets in the pipeline, it might take years.
Well, we sure as hell need it.
Yes.
Secondly, this long-term use of antibiotics, in large doses, is inclined or prone to develop yeast infections in the body, which itself has a long list of side effects which resemble those side effects supposedly produced by Lyme. Is that, how would you approach that? Would you use Diflucan or what?
Well, there's a lot of people who know yeast and anticipate yeast issues. That's why they take probiotics, which is like what's in yogurt. They'll take their diet and get rid of simple sugars. They'll get rid of all alcohol as a start, no matter what they're taking. There's so many people taking supplements hoping that if they're chronically ill and they've been on antibiotics for a while, they're hoping to get the yeast in balance. And also you have to find out when you should stop the antibiotic weigh all of those decisions to try to get well again.
Okay.
You know, yeast infection screws up your immune system and, messes up your whole immune system by itself.
Okay.
Well, that's quite a few professionals trying to challenge what to do with antibiotics, what to take for yeast, and that's a challenge we all face when we use antibiotics for any infection.
And is there any phage that infects the yeast or infects the Lyme bacteria?
I think that you want to get a good recovery, and so yeast and bacterial issues.
Phage is a virus. Phage is a virus that might infect the Lyme bacteria. Anything possible like that?
Well, that's you're getting into this broad area where it's exploring almost every topic. So that's why I'm glad you're bringing up some different thoughts that are out there.
I gotta go. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Right.
And I know our wonderful volunteers and interns will never take down a sheet before we're finished talking to the guy. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Beth in Montgomery. Beth in Montgomery, you're on. Go ahead, Beth.
Yes, I have two questions, if possible. One is that I've heard that once you have Lyme, which I did about 4 years ago, the blood test always tests positive. So even if you don't have it, it's not an accurate determination that you do have it or you don't have it. And the second part of my question is I have neuropathy. Now, that makes the symptoms very difficult, so I don't know if I have it or not because I have neuropathy, which gets sometimes very bad, and I don't know whether it's because I do have Lyme again or I don't.
One thing about positive tests is once they're positive, you're right. They stay positive, and the doctor has to listen to the whole story and decide whether to treat again, whether there's any treatment. Now, neuropathy is fascinating because it can come from diabetes, it can come from many things, but it also is very common in Lyme disease.
No, I got it from chemotherapy.
Okay, so that means that proves how many different ways you get into neuropathy. So sometimes, though, is that you can get two diseases at once. You can have troubles from the chemotherapy, but if you get Lyme, that can also cause problems, and it's a challenge for the doctor to sort out which one to pursue.
Right.
So, Dr.
Well, that would be a very determining factor because I really don't want to go on antibiotics unless I really do have to. You understand?
Well, because you already have neuropathy that you understand and have a good doctor to follow you, you probably have to look at all the other issues, and and make a careful decision with your doctor. It's the doctor who works it out with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so just following up on that wonderful question for a second, and that is, there have been cases, right, in which people are diagnosed positive for Lyme disease but don't have it from the test.
Yes, there are some people with a positive ELISA or a positive Western blot that have never had Lyme that we're aware of. They're not sick. I do a careful history, and there's nothing wrong. And we assume that's a false positive. Now, sometimes I'll give them 3 weeks of antibiotics just to be on the safe side, but if nothing happens, that's it. I just let those go if they have no symptoms.
That's interesting because Murray the dog, who lives at our house, the Westie got positive for Lyme disease, but there's no evidence he has it.
Well, dogs don't complain much.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so
they make a very good point.
And if they're lame and can't move, they're telling you something. But
sure.
But it's very hard to read a dog, but it's also hard to read a teenager. Somebody in perimenopausal, it takes a second history, a little deeper than you normally get during your physical exam.
We are talking to Dr. Daniel Cameron of the First Medical Associates in Mount Kisco, New York, home of the Lyme Project for Research and Treatment of Lyme Disease, and we're very lucky to have him with us today. Let's go to Rick in Leeds. Okay, Rick, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I just wanted to ask about the CDC, the NIH, and the Infectious Disease Society of America.
That's
all?
Their
opinion that there is no such thing as chronic Lyme disease, that people end up with an autoimmune problem, perhaps from being infected with Lyme. And the other two-part question is anaplasmosis and babesiosis, which I look at as being somewhat more serious for some folks, the fact that, potentially fatal diseases that are also in the deer tick population. So I thought I'd ask for some comments on those two things.
Well, the first set of letters are, like the Infectious Disease Society of America, some of them are thinking that, yes, they're sick, but it's just their immune system. You just have to fight the immune system. I find, though, in my practice, just treating the immune system isn't as effective as if I use an antibiotic. They say the opposite, that steroids or some other immune modulating thing might help. The part about a tick, it has a lot of stuff in that tick. That tick bites a mouse. Typically, we avoid mice droppings, but a mouse that's been bit by a tick, then a tick bites you, has all kinds of bacteria and Babesia is a parasite, anaplasmosis, Ehrlichia. Some of those are life-threatening if you get sick the first week. But they also seem to linger, and there's a lot of people with chronic issues related to Babesia, chronic issues that can only get better if they take something that works for Babesia, just treating for Lyme alone isn't enough.
Right, not an antibiotic, though, right? Not for Babesia.
Well, they would use a parasite medicine, which is in the antibiotic family. It's just an anti-parasite drug. And sometimes when you run into a wall, you can't get better with an amoxicillin or doxycycline prescription. Sometimes Babesia is in the background.
Mm-hmm. The CDC kind of says that if you go to the doctor and they suspect anaplasmosis or even ehrlichiosis, that they think you should be on an antibiotic immediately. And if you have a Lyme thing, if you have an engorged tick that you take off your body, they often talk about prophylactic antibiotics. And I wonder if you have an opinion on the prophylactic approach. Do you think that's effective? What if you already had an infection?
Well, let's talk about the anaphylactic just for a second, because anaphylactic was defined by the infectious disease specialist as two doxycycline pills. That's it. You get bit, two doxycycline pills, and my concern is none of those patients were followed more than 5 weeks. So we have no idea whether true doxycycline prevented anything beyond 5 weeks. That study never looked at whether it prevents any chronic issues, any neurologic issues. It just looked at rashes. So I find that two doxycycline pill doesn't come close to making me feel comfortable when someone has an engorged tick bite.
And by the way, how long does that rash last traditionally or typically?
The rash can last from a day to several weeks, and the it's sometimes people never get a rash, or they might look like a spider bite, look like a scaly rash, any type of rash.
Okay, well, thank you very much
for the
call. Appreciate it. Yeah, I take it you see how informed our listeners are. It's amazing how good everybody is. And let's go to John in Rosendale. Hey, John, you're on. John.
Hello?
John, you have to turn your radio off. That's a no-no. You have to listen on the phone.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to know, what are the symptoms of of Lyme disease? What are the symptoms of being bit by a tick and so on and so forth?
Well, many times it's people will share stories, and it's that fatigue, that keep waking up at night, tired and wired, fog in terms of memory comes and goes, poor concentration. They're dizzy when they get up too quick. Their hands and feet are numb. They have pains that move around, back pains, their irritability, a lot of mood issues, or maybe only get half of those. But still, any of those can come and go and really mess up your day.
John, thank you. Appreciate it. Let me ask you this. Are we doing enough as a society? I mean, I grew up on Fire Island in the summers, and they would spray for mosquitoes. Are we doing enough to eradicate the pests that carry the disease?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think we're doing anything right now to eradicate the pest. We probably did our best with the DDT, with running around, but there was so many side effects of DDT spraying it that we really don't have a way to control the tick population at this time.
So mice and things like that, we can't. Do we think it's the mice now? Is that the newest theory as opposed to the deer? Or what?
Well, I think the deer are have very little to do with it, as you mentioned. It's the mice and the other rodents. The birds that are keeping it around, moving it from yard to yard. So even if you have a fence, those mice can run right through and carry those ticks around.
Are you alarmed at the spread of Lyme disease?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that's much much more affecting the fabric of medicine. That medicine is so used to simple colds and flus and chronic disease like heart disease, cancer. But this whole new wave of chronic illness is messing around with how doctors practice, and so patients go in to see this doctor, and the doctor's so used to cholesterol, and now you have a chronically ill patient who's messed up, and how to shift it's really messing us up.
We got to take some more calls. Let's go to Helen in Little Falls. Helen, by the way, if you're trying to get in now, forget it. All five votes are ringing. Go ahead, Helen.
Hi. My question is that I do have Lyme disease, or I was diagnosed with it anyway, and I was treated for over a month with doxycycline, and I still have numbness on the left side of my chin and my lower lip, and it has not gone away. It stayed the same since it started. And the day this all started, I had the bullseye rash, severe left side jaw pain, lower jaw, and the numbness all at the same time.
Doctor.
That numbness can come from Lyme, but it reminds me that every time someone has a symptom, it's often important to also include a consultation with another doctor. So sometimes that numbness can be from Bell's palsy, but it can also mean it's time to see a neurologist to make sure there's nothing on the MRI scan or nothing on a CAT scan. So it's a puzzle. And now from my perspective, if it's just numbness, I'm always asking a more complicated history to see if there's any other clues as to whether Lyme is the thought or whether to go to a neurologist.
Well, they sent me to a rheumatologist first, and now I have an appointment being set up with a neurologist, so that's the right way for them to take me then.
Helen, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Gina in New Paltz. Gina?
Yes, hi. I was diagnosed with Lyme's last September, And my doctor put me on 3 weeks of, I think it was doxycycline. I was supposed to take the pill, one pill twice a day. I did miss a couple of doses, but I finished the whole thing. I never felt right after that. I still just never, it wasn't like I felt great. I didn't feel good again. So she sent me to a neurologist. I just recently had a spinal tap done, and it came out negative for Lyme. Does that mean that there's no, it's not Lyme's affecting me anymore, or could it still be Lyme's that's affecting me? I'm still having symptoms. I'm still having these issues.
Well, it could still be Lyme. The spinal tap is really not very good at all. In fact, only 2 out of 27 neurologic cases have something in her spinal tap. So certainly that's not the end of the story.
Okay, okay. So just because it's not in the or didn't go into the nervous system, I guess, doesn't mean that it's still not affecting your body.
Well, these were neurologic cases. It just, they felt like neurologic. They had all the right presentations. They just couldn't prove with the spinal tap. And so the doctor still has to look at the whole story and make a decision with you.
Okay. And can Lyme lead to something else? Like, could it give you arthritis? Could it give you a heart issue? Could it give you, like, can it give you other things?
Great question. Doc, we only have a few seconds to answer this.
It could give you what looks perfectly like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. It could even look exactly like multiple sclerosis. And so the doctor has a challenge to decide which is which. They would usually do evaluation for both.
Okay. All right.
Tina,
thank you very much
for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. One free phone open, and we'll just have a few underwriting announcements. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from American Meditation Institute, Averill Park, New York, offering meditation classes for beginners working to reduce stress and enhance their health. AmericanMeditation.org. Kent School, working to help students develop their passions and a lifelong love of the arts. Kent-school.edu. The Last of the Mohegans Outdoor Drama, Lake George, New York, presenting drama and presentations celebrating local history through August 18th. Lastofthemohegans.org for schedule. And the Red Lion Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, offering accommodations for celebrations and business events with access to the Berkshire's outdoor activities. RedLionInn.com.
1-800-348-2551. Our wonderful Dr. Cameron just said you have a great audience, and we do, and we're very protective of you guys, and that's why Dr. Cameron has come all the way up here from Mount Kisco. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, Doc, how do they do it?
Well, they could call my office at 914-666-4665 or contact me on my website, which is Cameron@LymeProject.com.
And that's C-A-M-E-R-O-N at
Lyme Project with L-Y-M-E.
L-Y-M-E, yeah.
Project.com.
Yeah. Okay. I'd be surprised how many people messed that one up. Let's go to Ricky in Kingston. Okay, Ricky, you're on. Ricky. Whoa, I don't know that Ricky is still with us. Too bad. Okay, bye, Ricky. Let's go to Ruth in Albany. Okay, Ruth in Albany, you're on.
Thank you. And we have been to see you, Dr. Cameron. I don't have Lyme, but someone else in my family did. And you were very helpful. I'm allergic to most antibiotics because I was put on for an infection with doxycycline, Flagyl, and amoxicillin. What do I do when... And I did get C. diff, a very bad case of it, even though I was on probiotics. What do I do? Vancomycin is a possible ability for me. Is that also something good for...
Before we answer, can we find out what C. diff is for the rest of us?
Well, we talked earlier about side effects.
Oh, I see.
And so the reason we use probiotics is to try to prevent it. But it is a risk that... there's a treatment for it, which means that you have diarrhea with some blood, some mucus coming out, and there's an antibiotic for it like Flagyl or vancomycin.
Right.
And it is something that we're always looking out for as doctors, and that's why we still are cautious on who we should treat. Now, in your case, because you've tried an organized approach to antibiotics, you may not actually find any antibiotic that you can tolerate.
I can tolerate vancomycin. I don't know for how long. Is that also something that can be used?
I don't use vancomycin, even though there have been a few reports from years ago.
Yeah.
So it's unknown as to whether it's effective.
Okay.
Doctors tend to try to use it for staph infections.
What else might I do?
Well, you might, if truly there aren't any antibiotics to use, you're left with what the Infectious Disease Society of America recommends, which is just treat the symptoms.
Oh, dear.
And I have patients myself where if they can't tolerate it or they can't get better, it's a challenge taking every one of those symptoms I just mentioned earlier in the day and fighting each one of those symptoms with a pill. You can end up with 6-7 bottles of pills and still not find much relief.
For example, what are some of the specific areas other than, you know, antibiotics could cure?
Well, let's say if you have pain,
yeah.
I find the narcotics don't work very well.
Uh-huh.
If I have poor concentration, things like Adderall or Ritalin, the types of things used for ADD, help some, but they don't help as much as you think. The antidepressants that are used help sometimes that wired or angry feeling, but they're not working as well as in a typical psychiatric practice or a typical practice that I take care of. There's sleep issues. They might be taking something like Ambien. They find that, gee, they're awake 2 hours later anyway.
Right.
And the neuropathy medicines with pains don't work very well. But they're sometimes around 6 things anyway because each help a little.
Okay.
So I won't walk in the grass. The other question is vitamin D. A long time ago, that was considered not to be taken.
Well, there was one doctor who proposed the low vitamin D, but he's not a medical doctor, and he's doing research to find out why it worked for him. That's a PhD named Marshall.
Are you saying we shouldn't take it then?
Well, I think that vitamin D, I encourage vitamin D, and it's still worth treating. I just don't like to rely only on vitamin D. If you're sick, you're sick.
No, I meant just as a general.
I like vitamin D.
You do. Okay. I thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay, let's go to, I can hardly read, Rob in Chester. All right, Rob in Chester, you're on.
Hi, this is John from Rosendale, not Rob.
Oh, well, somehow.
My question was covered a little bit earlier. Maybe there's something that can be added to it.
Okay, but John, were you on before? Did you actually? No, okay.
You said I had the radio on then.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
What happens, how does it help the diagnosis get more complicated?
Wait a second, Rob, you still have the radio on. It's driving me crazy. You got to turn the radio off, and that's the rule. And listen in your telephone. Go ahead.
Not have a radio on.
Well, something strange.
How does the diagnosis for Lyme disease get more complex and less reliable, potentially, once you've had it once or twice?
Well, once you take antibiotics for anything, whether it's for a toothache or a sinus, it changes the spirochete, that bacteria that causes Lyme. And so the blood tests rely on your immune system. And any steroids, any antibiotics changes that spirochete so your immune system doesn't recognize it, and therefore you're left without a positive test.
So it's not that it's always positive after you've had it. It can be negative falsely.
It can be false negative based on any antibiotic, or it can go from positive to negative after a little while.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. Okay. And let's go to Erica in Poughkeepsie. Erica, you're on.
Hi. I had Lyme a few years ago. I also was, I had 6 weeks of doxycycline, which did not help me a whole lot. But I found that homeopathy was what absolutely saved me. And it took time, and also the diagnostic tool that the homeopathic practitioner used, which is certainly unconventional, but used in Europe. It's called a biomeridian machine, and it identified different pathogens that were indicated, and then I was treated homeopathically for them, and I have no residual symptoms.
Well, I can tell you that wellness is important no matter how you get there. So there are people where they get surprised that one single antibiotic, you know, for 1, 3, 4, 5 weeks wraps it up, and that's it. and all they need is something to, with their immune system to wrap it up. So don't be frightened of Lyme, thinking that everybody has to be on long-term antibiotic or complicated antibiotic regimens. And so I'm very happy for you.
I do want to say, though, that after finishing 6 weeks of doxycycline, I still had many of the symptoms of neuropathy, of joint pain, and that kind of thing. It wasn't until it was several months on the homeopathic remedies that eventually took that away. And
Think that I'm an epidemiologist, so what happens with the numbers game as an epidemiologist, if you look a year later, 2 years later, there's an awful lot of people that aren't doing well. And so therefore, when you're well like you have been, that's great. But we need some protocols for those who are chronically ill. And that's why the doctors always make a decision when to stop. So it sounds like it worked well for you.
Thank you, Erica.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Jessica in Albany. Jessica, you're on.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
We're good. You go.
Okay, my 5-year-old daughter, for the past 3 weeks, has been having fevers every, I don't know, 5-6 days. And I have 2 other children. She's been having a sore throat. She had her first ear infection this summer. She's having a lot of leg pain, headaches. And then all of a sudden, my dad just says, maybe it's Lyme disease. What do I have to do? Do I have to bring her into the doctor, get her a blood test? What should my steps be?
Well, I think that that's the challenge pediatricians face, is what's the common cold, what's an earache, and what's Lyme disease. And so I'd always recommend that you read a little bit about Lyme disease so at least you know in your own mind what you're witnessing. So when you go to the doctor, not only are they looking for regular infections, but if you know kind of the signs that a little bit more yourself, you can have a better conversation with the pediatrician, a more balanced conversation.
Now, if you go to your website, will some of those situations be listed?
I think that I work with adolescents and adults, but many of the things I mentioned today, most of it is all there as a sort of a beginner work, but there's plenty of sites that give you like some background to help you understand your child better. Even if they don't have Lyme now, it's always good to, as a parent, get to know Lyme somewhat. So if anything ever happens next summer to you or a cousin, you're least you're aware.
And the blood test is the only way usually that a doctor would prescribe anything for Lyme disease, correct?
Well, the pediatricians are divided. Many of them will want a blood test, but still, you'd like to, if the child stays sick, you'd like to at least have the doctor look beyond that. And I think that's, as a mom, the more you know, the more a better case you can lay out for your child.
Jessica, thank you. We're trying to get everybody in. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much.
Right, bye. Let's go to Jay in Kingston. Jay in Kingston, you're on. Hello? Jay?
Hello?
Hello? Go ahead, Jay. We're running out of time here. Go ahead.
Okay. Is the doctor on?
Yes.
I had Lyme disease 3.5 years ago, and what worked for me ultimately was sweet wormwood, which is an herb. And the concentrated form is called artemisinin. If you have done research, would you research that product?
Well, there's an increasing number of providers that are offering different alternative medicines to pick up when someone's had Lyme. How do you wrap it up? And so instead of antibiotics being the only story, you're talking about some of the newer supplements that are trying to help get the immune system under control.
So. Or to make somebody some money.
Well, both.
The point is that it worked, and it works beautifully. The way it works like a white corpuscle in that it explodes H2O, hydrogen peroxide, all over the spirochete, just like a white corpuscle enclosed does, you know, so it's pretty natural. And so it works.
Well, I think that what you're finding is that because so many people have chronic issues after Lyme or mm-hmm. during Lyme, is that there's not much research, but there's an awful lot of traditional herbs or that are out there that are being introduced to see if they can find a way to get that immune system or the neuropathy under control. So there's plenty of testimonials of people where they found a way to wrap it up with some supplement. It's just there's tremendous diversity on which one says work for them.
I see. Okay.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Let's go to Rob in Chester. Rob, you're on.
Hi. Let me be quick. I was one of the brave souls that had the booster shots years ago, the three series of boosters. I want to know how effective they were. That's the first part of my question. And second part of my question, was there side effects from those boosters? Because a few years later, I got something called CVID, common variable immunodeficiency. So I'm wondering if there's a relationship, and again, how effective were the boosters?
Well, first of all, that it was 78% effective at getting rid of rashes. But what people wanted to do was get rid of Lyme itself, prevent Lyme.
Correct.
So it was only 50% effective against people who had what they presume was Lyme because their test became positive, they became sick. And so it wasn't as good as I would have liked. You know, and if you don't get a rash, you know, sometimes that's all you got. When
right.
it comes to the side effects, is that there's still uncertainty as to whether this vaccine ever affected the immune system.
Okay.
And you're talking about an immune system response to the kind of the nerves that still, since there weren't as many cases as you'd like, the research community is still divided about how do you prove whether that vaccine caused any long-term problems.
Right, right. I never had Lyme's. I had just taken it as a preventive action because I like to be outdoors.
Well, but they don't do it. But Doc, right? They just don't offer this anymore for good reason.
They haven't had it in the market for more than a decade because there's just enough uncertainty to not to volunteer to give anybody until they work out those details. And so, I mean, you can get Lyme disease anyway, so you don't know. What happened? So they haven't worked out the details.
Rob, we're going to let you go. There are a lot of people, and I've just got a few seconds left.
Okay,
let's go to Jeff in South Glens Falls. All right, Jeff, you're on. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi. Yes, Dr. Cameron, I've got a couple quick questions. First, a previous caller mentioned wormwood. Is that what Dr. Burascano refers to as artemisinin? Is that the same thing? Are you familiar with that?
Well, I think Dr. Burascano tries to make a list up of what he thought might be useful. He doesn't have the opportunity to do research on it, so I don't know exactly what's in his latest edition, but he's always at least mentioning a list of things to consider.
Okay, next question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, my other question concerns the Infectious Disease Society of America has been the primary obstacle to effective treatment of Lyme disease. With all the publicity, the action in Congress, do you see that the Infectious Disease Society of America is starting to open their eyes a little bit, or are they still entrenched in being the obstacle?
Well, I think the Infectious Disease Society of America is dominated by a few clinicians that have written some guidelines. There's certainly a lot of doctors in the area who are more flexible, who are taking more of a moderate position, and you're going to find that a lot of doctors will order tests for babesia, anaplasmosis, ehrlichia. They'll treat with more than just doxycycline. If you've been sick a while, they'll look at chronic issues a second time. And so, you know, just because it's a hard-line Infectious Disease Society of America position, doesn't mean that all doctors have to follow that line. These kind of debates at least get doctors to try to make those balanced decisions.
Okay, we got to go. Thank you very much. Let's go to Christine very quickly. Christine wants to know whether she's going to have heart surgery. Does Lyme disease affect the heart?
Well, Lyme disease mostly affects the rate, the electricity going through the heart rather than the tissues. So even though I've read reports that it affects the muscle, Uh-huh. I've never seen it affect the actual heart muscle itself.
Okay, Christine, I'm so sorry. We've got no.
It's just the mitral valve.
I haven't seen it affect that valve in my own practice.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Christine. Thanks for understanding. This is tough because we have a lot of people still on the line. We're just about out of time. Support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. And Woodland Pond at New Paltz, independent retirement living in cottages or one or two bedroom apartments, assisted living, memory care, also skilled nursing, all on the same campus, 845-256-5520. Thanks again for everybody for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Emily Baker. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I want to thank Dr. Daniel Cameron for being with us. He's very giving to come all the way up here and do this. I'm Alan Shartok, and I apologize to those who we couldn't talk to today. Stay tuned now for a news update.